Not doing very well, I'm going really shaky. I think I'll get a cold or something. Councillor Dominic. That did it. Good evening, everybody. I'm not normally that loud. Right. My name's Janice. I'm chair of this meeting. As ever, we welcome observers to this meeting of council. Please note that this meeting is being recorded. This isn't a public meeting, but a meeting of the council held in public. Members of the public, please do not approach the councillors, and councillors, please do not engage with observers during the meeting. I remind councillors of the need to treat all present with respect, and ask members of the public to do the same. And members of the public, please maintain silence during the council deliberations. And please make sure your phone's on silent. I always have to triple check my I'm sure it is. Okay. So, first of all, apologies and approvals of absence. Please, Clark.
No problem at all. No councillor had made me aware that they weren't able to come, but I understand that Councillor Robinson isn't going to attend.
Yep.
Thank you, Frank.
He asked me to pass on the message. I'm sorry about the late arrival.
That's. Thank you, Frank.
Diplomatic flu.
So, declarations of interest.
There is a lot to tell councillors here.
I'll just sit back then.
It's quite a speech. Quite a speech. So, four councillors have updated their register of interest. Councillor Muckian has updated her register of interest to include that she's been nominated by the parish council to be the PC representative on the Laddon and Guildhall local committee, and that you are an ordinary member of the National Trust. Councillor Sherman has updated his register of interest to include that he rents for no consideration a 20-foot container for storage of his personal effects on Second Meadow. Councillor Dominic has updated his register of interest to include that he rents allotment beds and space for an apiary on Poultry Farm and Circum Meadows, and that he also has various local responsibilities. He's leader of the Laddon of the War Planning Group, chair of the Laddon and Waterside Allotments Group, leader of the Laddon and Beekeepers, and Hornet Warden for Laddon and Manaria. And he's also an unpaid director and the CEO of Anglia Maghreb Quantum Cities. Councillor Robinson has updated his register of interests concerning his business interests. He's declared that he's connected with Greenwich Park Management Limited and that he and his partner together have 29 income-generating properties. He's also updated his register to include that he's a member of this council's planning working group. I'm anticipating that various councillors will need to leave the room for items 9B, the marketplace, 12, the hub, although that would have been Councillor Robinson's, though, and he's not here, 13, allotments, and 17, the First Meadow boundary. But I'll pause there. Do councillors have any further interests or updates to their interests that they'd like to tell me about?
Chair, I'm a bit confused. I wouldn't have thought that it was necessary for councillors to register their interest in a working group of the council.
If I agree with you.
Case, I'm a member of the planning
group. I agree
group.
With you, and that point will come up later.
Oh, right.
That will come up later. Very seriously, I'm also aware, and indeed many councillors, or all councillors are aware, that a significant volume of correspondence has been received by the monitoring officer at Labour Council detailing concerns with alleged incomplete registration of interest by councillors and indeed a number of other alleged behaviours by councillors. In summary, the monitoring officer has received considerable correspondence alleging that councillors have breached the code of conduct. The monitoring officer has asked me to inform councillors that his office is still considering those complaints. It is, he tells me, likely that some of those complaints will be dismissed, some may be relevant for informal resolution, but he tells me that he's confident that he will determine that some of those complaints require more formal action. And to that end, he's actively considering which of the complaints received will be referred to the Suffolk Joint Standards Board for their formal consideration. That board will be comprised of councillors from Mid-Suffolk District Council, and he advises me that when a Joint Standards Board hearing is required, the complaint subject will be informed of the hearing date and the appropriate arrangements. That meeting will be held in private as it relates to an individual, but the board's decisions will be published publicly and reported at a meeting of this parish council. He advises me that the most common actions that may be taken by that board should it uphold a complaint are to recommend that the subject member, the councillor, in other words, be formally censured, or to recommend that that subject member be removed from all working groups of this council, or to recommend that they should be removed from all outside bodies to which they've been appointed by this council, and to instruct the monitoring officer to arrange appropriate training. And with respect to requests for dispensations, I have only one update concerning dispensations. As referred to earlier, Councillor Robinson updated his register of interest to include membership of this council's planning working group. That really could be considered an abundance of caution, and he subsequently wrote to me, "Andrew, to enable me to participate fully and vote on all planning matters, excluding any items where I hold a disclosable pecuniary interest, I'd be grateful if you could issue a blanket dispensation covering my involvement in planning discussions and voting." He wrote, "It's my opinion that membership of the parish council's planning group does not lead in and of itself to conflicts of interest at a parish council meeting. It's my view that conflicts of interest should and must be considered on a case-by-case basis. I therefore declined his request for such a blanket dispensation, which I really should, to be fair to him, make clear was not requested for items in which he had a disclosable pecuniary interest. And the monitoring officer has agreed with me that he agrees with my interpretation, and he's advised me that being on a working group of the parish council does not create a conflict type scenario in terms of interests." I'm sorry, that was very long, but there was a lot to report to councillors.
Well, I hardly dare ask, but on top of that, were there any further requests for dispensation?
No, there was only the one.
Right.
I just kind of found that interesting. Once I've worked my way through that legalese, I don't need to register the fact that I'm on the planning.
No, you don't.
No. Lord. Okay.
Just,
okay. Yes?
Just a clarification on that. If someone is declaring community interest and they're on a planning group, we wouldn't include them in the discussions for that particular community interest.
Correct. Exactly.
You wouldn't. But
and regardless of the dispensation, it doesn't mean that dispensation you can get involved in all discussions. It's only those.
His request, it's unfortunate he's not here to speak for himself, but his request was for a dispensation for all planning matters which didn't relate to his disclosable pecuniary interest. And that I wasn't prepared to give, because, as we all know, interests can arise all over the place. Someone could be a friend, someone could be a relative. There's all sorts of reasons why, even though, just Jack, because you're sitting in front of me, all sorts of reasons why it wouldn't be appropriate, in my opinion, for you to get involved in a planning matter beyond the fact that it's just your house, or next door. It could be five reasons of which I wouldn't speculate. So that's why that was turned down.
Right, next item, minutes. I think you can just whiz through them. Everybody's had ample opportunity. Has anybody contacted you with regard to the minutes?
Yes, they have. Councillor Dominey contacted me, and I do believe someone else might have done as well. But I've made some changes, and it's now up for council to decide whether they're happy with those minutes or not.
It was a long meeting.
Can I ask a question? Have the changes been made since the papers were published last week?
Absolutely not.
Okay, thank you.
Right, so at the end of the minutes, Did anybody have any further disagreements or comments on the minutes? In which case, would somebody like to propose them as accurate? Councillor Sherman, and seconded by Councillor Falconer. And we'll do an audible vote, starting here.
I wasn't here, but I understand that I have listened to the tape, I have read the minutes, and I would approve them.
I wasn't here, so that's okay.
Yes.
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 I haven't read the minutes, and I wasn't here, so I'm going to abstain.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Does
yes,
Councillor Mulford want to say, want to add anything?
You're asking me.
Okay. Would you ask Councillor Mulford if he wishes to withdraw any allegations or apologise?
Councillor Mulford, would you like to make comment?
Well, in response to the comment, I'm happy to say that, that anybody, including Councillor Donnelly, can refer me to management officer if they think that I have gone outside the council's code of conduct.
Thank you. Okay, so I think as you know, the meeting is being recorded. So moving on, we come to the public participation session. So anybody wishing to ask a question or make a statement has 3 minutes each. I'll try to give you a 20-second warning if you're coming to the end of it. The standing orders of the council are clear that this public participation session is 10 minutes and it is at the discretion of the chair whether or not further time is allowed. If everybody wants to speak, then I won't be able to accommodate everybody, but we will try. And if you have a question and it can't be answered tonight, please contact the clerk with your name and contact details, and you will receive a written response within 28 days. And particularly if you're new to us, it's really helpful if you tell us who you are before you start. After all of that, who wants to speak? Well, I've got a flurry of hands, so I think I'll start back right.
Yes. My name is Kathleen Lee. I live off Melford Road. I wanted to ask the council about the call to sites off Melford Road for planning. In particular, the relationship between this council and Acton Council, given that so the site very close to where I live is actually in Acton, but it's 2.5 miles away from the services in Acton, and actually closer to Lavenham. It is, I'm disappointed that the site that was, I think was brought forward in 2024 is still showing as suitable, because surface water from two of those sites have flooded my house on 3 occasions, 2 of which I was rescued by a Suffolk Fire Service. So I guess my question is, what's the relationship between decisions made around suitability of the site, notwithstanding that clearly favoured decision, but when a piece of land literally intersects sort of Lavenham and is in effect Acton site for close to Lavenham?
Yeah, I understand that you've been in communication with Councillor Sherman on this subject, and he may wish, and would you like to respond?
Mrs. Lee, I did respond to your email asking you to give me permission to share with Acton, Abbey Lee of Acton, Andrew Smith of our club. And today I haven't had a lot of permission to do that, and I will be happy to explain what the shower sites are and everything to you once I get that permission. But I know Abby and I know Andrew, but I can't use it because of GDPR unless you give me permission.
And I was under the impression I returned your email as soon as I received it, and thank you for getting in touch with me. But I haven't heard anything further, so...
I haven't received that email, because I did speak to our chair about it earlier this week. I will come back to you by the weekend.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so you're going to action that, yeah? Okay. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Somebody, who else wanted to speak? Yes?
In relation to the same, the, in relation to the same corporate site, I'll bring down a few concerns which we've already heard about. So the assessment says no risk of flooding, but on the government website, our risk of surface water flooding is rare to find. Similar concerns about the houses being something in Hampton Parish to using our services. But largely also concerned about the appearance of our lovely village. We've got huge developments going up, like we've seen on the outskirts of Derry and Melford, a lot of which just sat empty due to low demands, floor estates and a wooden building. I think, speaking to my wife first, she's got a lot of concerns. What we'd like as an action point is a date set and type of size for people to voice concerns before we get to the next planning stages. We've had posts on Facebook from Councillor Ward to say there's a certain variety of questions we will now be discussing, but a lot of people are now feeling a bit stirred up and would like to know how we can now have those discussions.
Would you like to pop your address to my email address, and I'll do my best to satisfy you, because I did follow Councillor Ward's comments on Facebook, and I chose not to get involved. But please bear in mind, it's a call for sites only. Whatever he says, basically, anybody can put in a call for site, and it would show on the show report that has just come out. That in no way means that they've got planning permission, that they're suitable for planning. It's to put their land forward for consideration. And as it only came out Thursday or Friday last week, I can assure you there hasn't even been a council meeting about it at all. So there's been no decisions made on anything at the moment. So if you pop your concerns into it, it is on the council website, or I can scribble it down to my parish council email address. And I'm the chair of the evolving neighbourhood plan. I'd be only too pleased to discuss it with you and your neighbours.
Chair, is it appropriate? Can I ask Councillor Sherman a question?
Yes.
On the subject. Thank you. Is it the intention of the LNC group that there will be a view emerging from that group about the sites in the proximity to the Lavenham boundary?
Yeah,
and that it will come back to this council at some point?
I'm sorry, we only got it last Friday.
I'm just asking if that's your intention.
It's down near the whole of Acton, and Lavenham have been called for sites with far, far, far greater than the one in 2025. And yes, we will be addressing it. We've got a meeting next Monday, and we will be bringing it forward.
Thank you. You want to speak?
I think you would all. Councillor Sherman, contradict me if you disagree, but I think it's also important to note that the questionnaire that will very shortly be delivered to every house in the village, asking them for what their views are on the Lavenham neighbourhood plan.
Yeah.
I think that's currently at the printers, and
it
will come out very, very shortly.
We've got the newsletter that we got signed off by the council, is printed and is ready for distribution this week. And the questionnaire will go out to every household in the 11 borders the week after.
Thank you. And there is an opportunity for people to submit an extra sheet of freehand, given their opinion.
Anyway, if you can't get it in the box, because obviously the more paper we have, the dearer the print it is. And if it's too long, they'll be larger. But please feel free to email me, write it on the back of a sheet of paper or something and attach it to it, and we will consider every view that you've got.
Will there be a session up after the 25 hour implementation?
Sorry, but we can't run a question and answer session. So you've asked a question that's been answered, so unfortunately we've got to move on to give other people a chance to ask a question. Does anybody else want to speak? Yes.
Yeah. I'm Andy Lowe from the High Street in London. Obviously I appreciate you walked down to the parish council to set this up for one of the very expression, but I'm interested in their thoughts with regards to how to have this feeling. I travel a lot of the time to work and have to stay for a period of time. So driving and leaving the car in a car park for days of it wouldn't really be an option. And the bus service, pretty shoddy at best, and they can really run a timetable where they don't coincide with the train timetable. So when you get to the station somewhere, you conveniently miss the train by 2 minutes and have to wait for an hour for the next train to go. And one of the cab services that I use on a regular basis is based in Sudbury. Outside of being charged from Sudbury to London to go back to Sudbury again, they've tried on numerous occasions, almost to take this at face value, set up a cab firm here, and it's been refused on a number of occasions. Now, I'm not accusing the parish community or the people that are saying no to this to be vain, but I just want to know what the community's thoughts were on setting up this cab firm here by a company coming in and saying they want to run it, obviously, for a population that's quite aged, getting to hospital appointments, etc.
Interestingly, I had to try to get an emergency cab this morning in Field. I have never heard, and I'm sure councillors who've been on the council longer than me might say, I don't think we have ever heard of anybody wanting to set up a cab firm here. I think because we are in a bit of a cab and Uber wasteland here.
Yeah.
And I dare say a lot of people would welcome there to be a local cab company. And I don't think I can say anything more than that.
No,
there's a gap in the market.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity.
And Councillor Lamont's been on the council, I think, the longest.
Right.
I think that answers that one. Hopefully. Yes.
I'd much like to ask much more like last night, probably than
the other. Excellent, this is what we need.
We just got to say hello to Charlie and Harriet. We're really excited to be joining Labnet and having walked the angel in the marketplace. So, looking forward to being part of the village and hope to bring the pub back to life. Hello.
Well, welcome. You may change your mind once you've seen the pub. But welcome and thank you for coming along and introducing yourself. Anybody else? Is there any further details you want to give us now, or is it?
No, I don't think so. The company needs a lot of restoration. We've been speaking to Labour about heritage implications and making sure that we do all the right things for the building and the village. So there's a lot of work to do to stop doing the actual physical work first. Welcome any questions, obviously, but at the minute it's going through Labour again, making sure we're doing all the right things.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Would anybody else like to say anything? Lighthearted, preferably. No? Okay, I think we can move on. So, local authority council. Oh, chair's announcements. I'm getting ahead of myself. Right. Short and sweet. So, works for the new footpath adjacent to Melford Road appear to be complete. We've asked, Clark has asked for confirmation that indeed it is completely finished, but we still haven't received that confirmation, although I'm told it looks like it's finished. And we've been advised by Beba, and pictures.
Pictures.
Oh, I'm impressed.
A couple of days ago.
Oh, well done.
Just for interest. So that's where the project leads into. So you see, it's going to be tiled out and look forward.
Oh, wonderful.
You can see the footpath in across here.
Yeah.
And this is the footpath.
Oh, excellent. That's excellent.
I'm looking up from Harwood Place up to the park goes right and see the lamp that's set.
And here.
Lovely. The lamp that we bought.
Indeed, yes.
Right, lovely. Moving on. We have been advised that BABA are looking to grant a licence to allow a mobile veterinary service to park in Cochin Park car park for 2 days each week. They say that it shouldn't adversely affect car parking availability and that they're going to avoid busy weekends. And this mobile unit will occupy either one of the coach spaces or four car spaces. And as I say, busy summer weekends will be avoided. And lastly, on Tuesday, I had for the first time the pleasure of representing this council at a Lavenham Guildhall local committee meeting. The key point that I took away from that meeting, that I think not everybody in the village, particularly people who are relatively new to the village, may be aware, that if you're a resident in Lavenham, entry to the Guildhall is free, which is quite significant saving. And so I'm taking this opportunity to just pass the word out that indeed it is free and encourage people to go and visit it and have a look around. And that's my chair's announcement. So we can now move on to local authority councillors' reports. And you are going to start.
I am going to start. I'm going to do my best Councillor Robert Lindsay impersonation because he can't be here tonight. He begins by talking about the rights of way over the railway walk. Everyone, councillors will be familiar that this is all to do with the allotments on the other side of the railway walk and the rights to cross it. And as he says there, he's waiting to hear from the county's property officer, who was apparently on leave last week, about the access to the railway walk. And he's reminded them again, and will let us know when he has something. His next thing he talks about is Clay Lane. Obviously, you can read it, but after District Councillor Clover raised the issue of part of Clay Lane being made impassable apparently by construction vehicles, the Rights of Way Officer tells me that highways are investigating the causes and the potential enforcement. In the meantime, Brent Ely Parish Council has expressed the desire for funding to improve the surface of Clay Lane. He's passed that on to the BABA Still team, who have received that funding request favourably and added the lane to their local cycling, walking and infrastructure plan. And Brent Ely will bid for BABA Still funding to make it happen. The next thing he writes about is county council elections. There's two or three paragraphs here, but the gist of it is, I think as we all know, that government decided that it actually did need to listen to some legal arguments that were made, and therefore the county council elections are back on. The next one is a rather interesting point, actually, which is that the council is going to trial over the summer at 19 specific planned resurfacing works. They're going to trial the fortnight before that cars will be placed under the windscreens and through residents' doors. 2 days before the works are due to begin, cones will be put out with signage warning that this will become a towing zone on the day. And if there are cars there on the day, officers will knock on the doors, try to find the owner, and as a last resort, they will move the cars, and there is a £70 fine to get it back. Apparently, Essex have been doing this for about a decade and found out that it considerably reduces the cost of road works. So, I don't know where these 19 sites are, but those three issues, all the rest, which is on the website of Councillor Lindsay's report, but those three issues, I wanted to draw to people's attention.
Thank you, James. Thank you. Sorry, can I just say, Andrew, is it possible to pass on to Councillor Elizabeth to say thank you for sorting out the potholes, which he promised he would do and he's done? Thank you. If you could say thank you, that would be great.
Can I add a point of information? The abandoned mini on Spring Street has been eliminated, taken away. and I didn't need to turn it into a worked out vehicle.
Lovely. I think we'd better move on from that. Councillor Culver, you are representing both yourself and Councillor Mabry.
Just coming back to Councillor Lindsay's point about county council elections, that's absolutely correct. I mean, it's something you may know that the leader of Norfolk County Council has decided that she can't work with LGR anymore, and she's therefore withdrawing from the process. But of course, the whole thing was set up that we had mayoral elections, and then underneath that, you have the business of electing unitary authorities, and the idea was that they all matched up. So if Norfolk had three, Suffolk had three. That has all now been thrown into some sort of confusion. But in actual fact, the mayoral elections will definitely go forward. But it's not clear that the unitary authority elections will go forward, and it could be that at the moment the debate is between one and three, that the government could turn around and say, we're going to impose two unitary authorities for both counties, and they require an act of parliament to do it, but they could easily, the government could easily do this. So it's, nothing's very clear at the moment. It just seems that every time I think we've got to a point of understanding where we're moving forward, then it gets thrown up in the air again. So it is rather confusing, I'm afraid. And just to say that the pre-election period for the county council elections begins on the 27th of March. So now moving to strategic housing land availability assessment, and called SCART, which, yes, it has caused quite a lot of concern, this. And what I've tried to do here is just explain the whole process. So there have been two called sites. One was at the beginning of 2024, and that's where 580 sites were identified. Now, this is all it is. It's actually just landowners saying, we will be prepared to have our site considered for development. That's all it is. And then the second site occurred between October 2025 and January 2026, and that's out another 500 sites. However, on the first group of sites, they employed a particular methodology. And when the second sites came in, they employed a different methodology, which means that the two, you weren't comparing apples to apples, effectively. So they've now said, right, well, we're going to reassess the whole lot under the new methodology. And that's really where we are. And so in the first week of that assessment, all sites will be assigned a red, amber, or green rating, which is quite a simplistic system. But then they move on to consulting with experts from heritage, highways, sustainability. You're looking at infrastructure, flooding zones. Everything will be considered, and the number of sites that will actually go through to the shortlist is quite a limited amount in comparison to the 1,080 that they first started with. And of course, also the neighbourhood plan will have an impact here, and the council's joint local plan as well, which of course hasn't been published yet. So we're looking down the track, and we're really looking at a time really 2029, 2030, I think, when this starts becoming really material. Other than that, the other points I think I won't go through because they're fairly routine. With regard to one member of the public's request about the cab office here in Lavenham, that application would have to go into the licensing available. So any cab company interested in operating from Lavenham, they would apply to the licensing authority within Lavenham. Okay. I don't think there's anything much else. Councillor Lindsay, it's great that he's taken on the Clay Hill Lane, which is a mess. course, they couldn't really do much work with it until the weather started to improve. So we should start to see things moving. But as we saw the green willows and still process of funding, it takes a while for the orders to go through. I don't think there's too much else that. Oh yeah, the Lavender Butcher's Culvert, we're still working on that one. And again, we're just trying to see we're getting a good response there, but the fact is that because it's highways, they don't really have jurisdiction over the brook, but there is a potential fund that they can access to use for those works there. And I think that's that.
Thank you very much. Councillors, does anybody want to make a comment, ask a question? No? Thank you very much. Okay, so we will move on to the clerks and our RFO's report.
Thank you. So I'm going to begin a bit with, I'm afraid there's a lot here because it's the last meeting of the year and there's a whole pile of stuff we have to do by law, which is very, very dull. But I'm going to begin by talking about more interesting things, which is public realm. But in fact, I'm going to begin with an apology to councillors. And that is that neither this council, by which I mean me, or the tree surgeon, contacted Baber about the tree maintenance we did on First Meadow. And First Meadow is within the conservation area. The Tree Protection Officer has confirmed to me that we didn't need to contact him concerning the most significant work that we did, which was the felling of the silver birch, as that was dead. We should, however, have contacted the Tree Protection Officer of Baber concerning the trimming that we did for safety reasons of the branches overhanging the play area. We should have done that. Unfortunately, neither me, nor the contractor did this. Basically, the need to contact Baber fell through our cracks. We all apologise to the Tree Protection Officer, who's confirmed that had he been contacted, he would certainly have given permission, probably even by frequently done verbally, and that he's going to take absolutely no action about our error. But it is, however, a lesson learned, an error which we will not repeat.
Could I just say something about this? There is an issue at the moment with the tree people at Suffolk County Council.
This is Baber,
where applications have been put forward by residents in a conservation area. The contractor has received a reply saying it's going to be dealt with, and then 6 weeks later has contacted them again and said, I've heard nothing, and been told, oh no, we don't know anything about it. And this has happened twice in the last 14 weeks. So there is obviously an issue. So if Suffolk or whoever did the tree work had actually contacted them, they probably wouldn't have got a reply anyway. There's obviously some glitch in the system at the moment.
Could be, but there may be a glitch, but actually the Tree Protection Officer, when I rang him, left him a voicemail, responded to me within about a day saying, don't worry, Andrew, yes, he stuffed it up, but, you know. So actually, I was fortunate if I did get a quick response. But your point's noted, and we shouldn't have made the error. Continuing also with trees, the tree survey has been received, and it's been sent to our retained tree surgeon requesting the development of a prioritised action plan. And, still on trees, UK Power Networks visited First Meadows this week and they've identified which trees they'll be trimming back to establish the correct distances between the overhead electricity lines and the trees. The good news about this is the cost of this work is actually borne by UKPN. Anyway, should this work be carried out in the spring or summer, they will check for nesting birds, and I've put them in touch with Baber Council, who have approved their work. There we go. Next piece of news is enabling works have this week been completed in the Water Street car park for the installation of the replacement EV chargers. We anticipate that they'll be up and running in the next few weeks. And we will start, as you know, basically an organisation operating across the whole of Suffolk will take responsibility for them, and they will just rent these spots off us, which is much better than us trying to run EV chargers, and the chargers will be much better. Next thing I was going to say is, yes, I know the speed indicator device on the Sudbury Road has its good days and its bad days. It may be that I'll have to buy replacement batteries, so maybe that will happen shortly.
Can I just make a point? I think it should happen sooner rather than later.
It's quite funny. Every so often I go up there and it works. And I think, oh, it's had a sunny day, it's now back. And then the next day I go up and it's not. So replacing batteries.
I think Andrew is probably 10 years old.
I think it is replacing batteries.
Almost dead.
I've had a fun week with toilet doors. There you go. The locks have failed on 3 of the 6 toilet doors this week, 2 in Church Street and 1 in Prentice Street, and all have been repaired. I don't think it's vandalism. It's actually more likely just excessive force being applied to the handles by someone outside when the door doesn't open. So they haven't looked sufficiently carefully to see that it says locked and just yanked on it. So we've had 3 toilet door locks replaced this week. And there is now a second toilet roll dispenser in each of the loos to try and stop us running out. So that's public realm stuff. And then we get on to accounts.
Chair, could you just ask one question? Why is it that you're telling us that you can speak to the TPO officer and he will give you permission to cut down a tree or trim a tree or fell a tree, whatever, verbally over the phone, but the public, if they live in a conservation area, have to get their permission?
I really don't know. All I know is what he told me when he rang me up.
That's fine. I just wondered if there was a different reason.
All I know is that, yeah, he told me that he wouldn't.
Could I come in? You can, as a member of the public, you don't have to get planning permission necessarily. I've done it before when I've contacted the officer and explained what I'm doing, which is just really trimming. And that's...
I think I have to say it may be worth that being publicised to the public, because I'm assuming every planning application that's put in to cut, you know, the tree or trim the tree is costing those people money, which is unnecessary. So I think that's what we need to do.
Like I said, they do have criteria based on the size of the tree and the type of the tree, which they make a decision for the need for the application.
Oh, I see, before the actual, when we see an application, that conversation's already been had.
Thank you.
Next. January accounts contain 2 variances, as can be seen on that graph there. The first big blue line is called tree maintenance, and it's nearly £6,000. And that was because the remaining part of the emergency tree work and the tree survey were all forecast to be done in January, but were done in February. So in the January accounts, it looks like there's this huge saving, and in February, the tree survey was not. And the second reason that's worth talking about on the January accounts is that, as councillors aware, we didn't have the contested election. It was just won by Councillor Norman with 100% of the something or other, and that saved us £2,000. And then everything else all together, similarly, about £2,000. That's the story on the January accounts. But actually, the draft February accounts tell a very different story, and I really want to focus on these as they contain a significant number of unexpected savings that we've realised in February. I know I sat here for many months saying, oh, it's all gloomy, but there does sort of come a month where even an accountant says, actually, it's not all gloomy. So, the February accounts will show a deficit for the 11 months of about £7,000. We forecast that the deficit for those 11 months together will be £17,000. So they're likely to be £10,000 better than we forecast. And what's the right thing for me to do is to tell you that, for the 11 months, we're now likely to be £10,000 ahead. But it'll be the same at the end of the year in a month's time. It's not going to change dramatically. It'll be £10,000. And these are what the savings are. There's £2,000 for the... booked for Jack, which we've discussed many times. The next one is very nearly £2,000, it's £1,700, and that's because I've been informed this month of what our annual bill from Suffolk County Council for the streetlights, electricity and maintenance is. And of course, this year, actually, electricity prices have remained relatively low. You know, and therefore, our bill for this year will be £1,700 less than we feared. So £1,700 has suddenly appeared from that source. The third source is a saving of £1,500, and that's because the grant that we gave the Christmas event group has been repaid absolutely in full. We've got every single pound that we gave those folk back. And indeed, they made a profit of £396, which is currently sitting in our bank account, but it is their money. You know, we haven't taken it to the income. It's their money. But we certainly got our £1,500 back, which is obviously nothing, which is not something I could have forecast last November would happen. So that's rather good. The next thing is that, and every councillor will know, I always get very embarrassed at this point, when I talk about burial income. Our burial income has been good, which I do realise is a structural ugly. So we're £1,200 ahead on burial income, just because the last three deaths have all been burials as well, and the fees for those are higher. The next thing is we have £1,200 of locality income from Paul and Margaret to help with the costs of tree maintenance. We reduced our cleaning maintenance cost in the loose by £800, probably because of the decision that council has made. And then in the same parallel, our winter electricity bill in the parish council office and the toilets is £400 less than we thought, because of course it's the same reason. And I've just gone through items there that add up to about £9,300, which I really didn't see coming last November when we did the reforecast. And we can go through one by one and go, okay, yeah, I get it. But that's really rather good news. I then written here in my notes, these savings will be somewhat balanced out by the upcoming legal costs concerning allotments and the upcoming repair costs of the hub building. But certainly they do make the financial position a bit better. And then the last thing I'm going to say on account is Suffolk County Council was paid in February for the streetlights and the VAT, and I've now made the VAT claim to recover the £26,000 worth of VAT that's sitting on that bill. And then we get to the I will pause in case councillors want to ask me, but then I'll just remind councillors that it's a requirement each year that we review our standing financial regulations, risk register, internal controls, etc. Otherwise we fail our audit, and so in a moment I will drag people through those things that I'm done unless anyone wants to ask me any questions.
Yeah, the VAT refund that we will get, is that included within the £124,000 broadly that we paid?
No, it was 120. So the bill was £128,000 plus that.
Okay.
As councillors, you voted to pay £128,000.
Okay.
I paid therefore £150-something or other. I can't do the maths in my head, and we recovered the VAT through our monthly VAT return.
Okay. Carry on.
Right. So I will now carry on. This is, I do apologise, going to be exceptionally dull.
Do you want some screen?
Right. Yes, Ian, if you could put item 8.3 up on the screen. There were the receipts and payments, which we will also vote on. Ian, before you go back to the receipts. Go to the receipts and payments, because that's two down. This is something we have to vote on each month. That is the list of what went through our bank account. If we look at this is January, so not Suffolk will not be here because this is January. If we look at what's there, there's big items. Well, there's a transfer from the business premium of £15,000, which is an opposite to the bottom. There's the big payments are JPP Landscapes, everyone knows who they are. Infinity Cleaning, they are the people that clean the loos. Our payments to HMRC for our December quarter. My wages is the next line down. The next decent sized one is we pay £3,760 every 6 months to repay our loan from the streetlights. Ironically, for the last 5 years, we've had a loan for the streetlights and not paid for the streetlights. You couldn't make some of this stuff up, could you? And then there are last payment down the bottom, the very bottom of any size, is Sterling Electrics, and that's the final payment to Matt the electrician for putting up and taking down the Christmas lights. Those are our fund movements for the month. But yes, to 8C, which is I think probably the next page, Ian.
And then just a question. Oh. It's related to this. Bobby Warren works the loan draw repayment. So we've now paid only 28,000, is that what you're saying?
So.
But I think the outstanding amount is 60,000. So is there. Are we able to pay the outstanding loan or repayment off and hence not be paying a higher rate of interest?
The answer is that. So we originally took out a loan of about £80,000 for the streetlights.
Yeah.
Because we've now 4 or 5 years through it, the capital balance outstanding is somewhere between 55 and 60,000. I can't remember exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If we were to pay that 55,000 back, we would then only have about 3 months' cash sitting in our bank account. So no, it would be the wrong thing to do because we would then not have a sufficient buffer of cash. Because obviously it's cash that ultimately matters. We wouldn't have very much if we paid this loan back.
Next.
18. So I will go through this as quickly
as possible. Do you want to do the vote?
Yes, we can do the vote, please. Yes, if we can. James, hand back to you. Yes, if you want to do
right.
That.
Right, so we've got the motion 8A is to approve the accounts for the month ending 31st of January 2026.
So we can do the six opponents at the same time.
Oh, marvellous. In which case, we will, assuming that councillors are going to vote the same way, we will also encompass within that the motion to approve, to review and approve, receive some payments for the month ending 31st of January. Are you happy, councillors, to do those both together?
Yes.
Would somebody like to propose that motion? So, proposed by Councillor Bourne and seconded by Councillor Andretta, and I'll start here.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
It's two then. No.
Right. So our standing orders are the 30 pages that explain how this council is run. We made a small number of changes in March 2025, which I don't believe have caused any particular grief. And in May 2025, we made some really insignificant technical changes, but they were technical changes required by the National Association of Local Councils. So this time, as this says, we're not going to do any changes at all, except one, which is consequent of the council decision we made in February. Our standing orders previously said that the tape of these meetings will be deleted immediately the minutes are done. Of course, that's now come out of standing orders because we're going to publish the tape. So, that's the standing order change. Nothing, in other words, except about the recording because we now publish the recording. The next one is standing financial regulations. We did a whole pile of stuff back in the 6th of March 2025, and we did some more stuff back in April 2025. And then, in March 2025, NALC issued revised regulations, which whilst they do actually nothing to the document whatsoever, really, it includes a new section called Risk Management and Financial Control, and it's got stuff in that section in bold type. And once it's in bold type, you must use it. So therefore I had to adopt it again, otherwise I wouldn't be using the bold type. So yes, there are changes. Yes, the document does look different. But actually, this will then get to, we have to annually review our internal controls. And this allows me to explain how our internal controls work. For a spend of over £30,000, we take it to tender. Spend of £3,000 to £30,000, we get 3 quotes. Between £1,000 and £3,000, we strive to obtain 3 estimates. And less than that, we just seek to achieve value for money. I can only spend £1,500 a month for proper functioning of the council or safety of the public without referral to you folk. No changes on that subject are there at all. And then if you turn to the next page down here, the other great internal control, a little bit too far in.
Back up Ian.
Sorry? You went a little bit too far.
Oh, too far.
Yes, you did. You've taken out, you've still taken out the top of the page.
Oh.
Right? Two people are still required to make any payments. So I've explained how we buy stuff, and then when we bought it, how money goes out. That's what our financial regulations say. So if people are happy with that, they should be fine. And then the next change is that on our scheme of delegation, there's a minor change to make it clearer as to what happens between council meetings when we need to make a decision. And it makes it clearer that the answer is that I try and consult with you guys. That's what it makes it clearer. The example is better, and it makes it clearer that I am expected to consult with you. And after that, in the authority, there are no changes, as it says, in the authority to commit resources. So, unless anybody's got any questions, I would like someone to propose them a motion to... Oh, I've got lots of questions. Well, there we go.
Mine is more an observation question. So, there's a point in there which... And Sammy will say you must have to split a tender into multiple parts in order to get it below the 3,000.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems that's exactly what we're doing in the pre-maintenance, is that it's been split into a number of sections.
No,
we've done one block of tree maintenance, we're going to do some more.
I frankly completely and utterly disagree. I put up a motion originally to do about £16,000 worth of tree work, right, yeah. Which was the whole lot. It got beaten back, so to speak, and said to be only the emergency work.
Yes.
And I will now come back in due course with a prioritised list of projects and ask to people to vote on it. But no, what I didn't do was put up the emergency work one month, and then the next emergency
work. No, I didn't do that. With the work that's coming up, absolutely, the emergency work, I
can't remember how much.
It was what?
The emergency work we had done was 4,000.
4,000, yeah.
But no, I actually came to everybody with the whole lot.
Yes,
not, yes. Let's have a monthly vote on a little bit more.
Councillor Morford, you
want? Yeah. This arises out of the discussion earlier on about declarations of interest. I hadn't really thought about it until. The standing orders refer to various working parties, working groups, review groups, etc. I can't quite. Understand the difference between them, but that's not my point. The question is that apart from us sitting around the table as the council, when groups like that meet, are they subject to the same rules about declarations of interest?
Yes, they are. So if, for example, you served on the planning group, Councillor Morford, yeah? And it was about, say, your very best friend's house, right? You would stay out of it at the planning group stage, and then you'd stay out of it at this stage. You'd stay out of it the whole way through.
So would you expect, I know that some of these groups don't actually produce either agendas or minutes, and they just do work, as well. But when the groups actually do record what they're doing, would you expect there to be the opportunity to declare interests? On
yes,
the agenda?
And there is.
And would you expect people to follow those rules during this such a short term
Are you referring to groups comprised of councillors or groups comprised of a mix of members of the public?
Well, the standing orders deal with groups that can have councillors and non-councillors.
On the planning working group,
yes.
The members of the planning group are expected to, be open about their interests and stay out of it, and that will then be consistently followed into this meeting. The neighbourhood plan working group doesn't present the same problems because you're not dealing with individual properties. You are dealing with a much more across-the-village approach. And the neighbourhood planning group doesn't really come with recommendations in the same way. It is a body that considers and proposes. But yes, the same rules apply, although I think it's much less of an issue. And then the third working group, as you know, is the council's whole finance and strategy working group, which is just every councillor being there discussing matters. But yes, the answer to your question is the same.
So that applies to councillors in those circumstances and to the members of working groups who don't have to be councillors.
They should, again, similarly.
Okay, thank you. And that's in here, though I can't see it at the time.
Yeah, I suppose the only point we can make in plan is if from the Liberal Planning Group, for example, or a landowner that has put forward a site for consideration, then they could
get themselves into quite a problem, yes.
I don't know if that's happened or if that could happen.
I have to say, I think this is a really interesting point that's been raised, and I've never given it any thought whatsoever about the composition of the LNP, for example, which is the current working review group. In the past, for example, we had a traffic working party group that comprised members of the public as well. And I actually think that it would be helpful if the council actually asked for those groups, the one that's currently meeting, and then there might be others in the future, to, as a matter of good practice, declare interest in any matter that might appertain to the work that they're doing. For example, we know on the current LNP group there are people who are members of an organisation which has a very clear interest in developing social housing, for example.
Indeed.
That's, and Ian's appropriately raised another possible example. I'm not aware of anybody who's registered land, but I know that there is a councillor sitting on this table has registered land in the past. So I think it's something that, for good practice, we ought to address it. Yeah.
Part of that means it appears to be rude to council, but we do have limits for the region, and we do publicise the minutes of the meeting on the table, but we've never been asked to publish our minutes, but we do have minutes for every meeting that we send to each group. Quite easy, we share it with the council if we publish.
Well, you do share it with the council. I think actually what I'm looking at is not the minutes of the meeting, but on this agenda, there is a set of minutes of the meeting you've recently held.
Oh, well, I didn't give them to them. I know we've got all of them.
And there's no reference on those minutes to declarations of interest or any response, any actions required in relation to conflicts of interest. And of course, the main thing may be that.
I think it's not unreasonable to flag it as a sort of uber best practice, just to be seen to be doing the right thing.
I think I'm going to approach it a little bit while the same as council, literally just said, never give it any thought.
No,
not really,
none of us have. But now that it's been raised,
we have a meeting on Monday. And it's got a section of ARP on it. I will bring that to the steering groups for them to ask them to have any declarations of interest ready to report to the council next month. Other than that, can I just say sorry, I didn't even never have a problem.
Well, none of us have thought about it. Thank you very much. Does anybody want to say anything else, or can we move on? So, have we finished 8C now? In which case we can do the motion.
Mm-hmm.
So, for item 8C, the motion is to review and approve the standing orders and the standing financial regulations, including the scheme of internal control, because I'm sure you all read it with fascination over the last week or so. Assuming that nobody wants to say anything else, could I have somebody to propose that motion? Councillor Vanzetta, and seconded by Councillor Bourne. Councillor Domney, I'm going to start with you this time.
What's the question?
The one I've just asked.
HC.
All right, go on. Yes.
That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Okay, HC.
There's one more dull one. I should also explain to councillors, the reason I put this towards the front of the agenda was because we have to call another meeting if we didn't get through this bit tonight, so therefore that's why it's front-loaded with this dumb stuff. The next thing is the risk register. As it says, last year Councillor Morph has suggested it be helpful to include both the likelihood of an event happening and the effect, and I have done that. If you could make it go down just a touch, Ian. What I really want to tell councillors is this year I actually had a real look at the register, frankly, because I've been clerk for 3 years. When you've been in 3 years, you actually start to understand what's in the job. And actually, what's in this funny thing, what I've done, notice, is that risks concerning physical equipment are actually, I think, the biggest, the most significant risks that this council has. And this is because whilst things such as streetlights and benches are distributed throughout the village and they don't contain any moving parts, but things like our toilets, where we've got electrical problems, plumbing problems, we have had leaks underneath, which very kindly Councillor Robinson sorted out last time, we have regular ironmongery failures, and as people know, many door problems, and it's the playground equipment. So these are where our real risks to use are. Particularly risks to users. As I say here, no incidents have been reported concerning the streetlights and benches other than lights not working and very occasional reports of dirty benches. And minor repairs have been required on the play equipment. People remember the vandalism graffiti. Yeah. But actually there have been no reports of injuries. The toilets, though, have developed all sorts of problems. Indeed, sewage spills, Councillor Sherman, you'll remember, all over the Prentice Street car park as well. And actually, in some ways, these are very hard facilities for us to manage. We have no out-of-hours maintenance service for these facilities whatsoever. Really not very easy. As I then go on to say here, financial risks, including fraud, you know, yes, they're present, and actually we've got insurance for much of this. But this is very much more easily controlled, because, you know, we only make 20 payments a month. You know, I put them in, Janice sends them, we all know what they are, they all get reported on the list. It's actually very, very easy to keep track of it. It's the physical asset stuff that's difficult. Actually, our biggest financial risk, I think, where we've struggled is if we were to go into a big capital project and, you know, there is a contractor. The contractor is more skilled at doing capital projects than we are because they do them more regularly. That's, I think, where we could get ourselves into the most difficulty. And the last thing I'd say is I've now split out the management risks from financial risks. And what have I said here? Council has reviewed and expanded its policies and procedures in over the last year hugely to deal with these, but inappropriate behaviour by members and by employees, including the full declaration of members' interests, requires ongoing monitoring. So then, I'm not going to talk people through the risk register or 5 pages of it, but if anyone wants to ask any questions, please go ahead.
First of all, congratulations. Oh, thank you for doing what was suggested a year ago. I would just like to challenge you just a little bit, Andrew, on the question of business continuity. And I do accept that that the issues of maintenance are very high on the list of potential problems that we might face. This is a problem which I hope we don't face, but could actually be quite considerable if we did. And you say under business continuity, the loss of or long-term incapacity of a clerk, and you say that the chances of it are low, which I think is true, but the impact of it is low, and I don't agree with that.
Of course, the impact would be horrendous.
But I think it is low. I'll tell you why. Because whilst it would be very annoying and frustrating and stuff, actually, JPB would continue to go and do the street cleaning. If you didn't pay JPB, they'd ring you up and say, where's the money? And Janice would go, oh, I know how much we pay them. We pay them the same amount each month. The electricity and phones and things would continue to work. A whole pile of stuff, the basic stuff that the folks out there get to see, would still largely happen.
and you get a year to sort out your bookkeeping and all the rest of it before actually someone says, oh, all your administration's gone to pot, you know, your failure audit, and it all gets very messy. You do get a fair amount of time to sort all those things out. And so that's why I put the fact that, because most of the people out there wouldn't notice if I fell off this chair, that actually the risk is low, the effect is low.
But the most people I think would notice if we didn't hand over a bunch of meetings.
They would.
And there would be no, I would say that really the effect of it is, at the very least, medium. If not, if only just for the stress it would put upon the chair.
Well, look, actually, to cut to the chase, I'm very happy to change the risk on that.
Well done.
To medium. And it was, I'm sufficiently nerdy that I enjoyed the conversation. There we go.
Excellent. Anybody else? Yes.
Couple of points. The annual inspection of gasworks for leaks and deterioration, when does that take place?
I walked around it this week, because as you know, there has been some work done in the gasworks car park this week.
So that will be, you know, photographs, whatever, for the annual inspection. My other question was, it's a church of all the gates, and we have had damage to tombstones. I'm just wondering whether that. So we had one last year, which was quite ceremony done by the
So, I mean, it's really rather sad. There are many, many gravestones out in that cemetery which are old and deteriorating in a very substantial way. But there are no circumstances, I'm not aware of any of them actually having, you know, caused damage to anyone or having frightened anyone.
That's right.
They just sadly do fall over, you know, decline and eventually fall over.
And so, and they have been repaired in the past.
I'm not aware that any, in my time, none have been repaired. It's not our responsibility to repair them.
We do. We have a responsibility for the churchyard, but we have never actually considered repairing any of those stones in my lifetime on this council.
In my previous lifetime on this council, we did
absolutely. Yeah, we did. Thank you for telling. So we're actually both right. Not in my time on this council, but thank you.
In a previous lifetime.
Does anybody have any other points about this risk register? No? Okay, so on the assumption that you're going to amend how the rent would be if you weren't
here. I would amend that one. So that is evidence of review, by the way, that people actually thought about it.
Well, it shows we read it.
It does.
So the motion is to review and approve the risk register as proposed by Councillor Morford and seconded by Councillor Ranzetta. You got him first. Councillor Domney, I'm going to start with you.
Why not? Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Unanimous. Thank you, councillors.
Thank you. Right.
This should be a question.
I'm going to do the planning register. The answer.
No, Healess and Lodge.
Healess and Lodge. Thank you. This is a very quick one. Each year we have to appoint a firm of internal auditors. For many years we've appointed Healess and Lodges who are based in Great Waldenfield. They know the affairs of this council and they charge us £400, and the actual man who does it is an experienced parish clerk. So legally we have to appoint internal auditors. I should be grateful if someone would propose the motion that we appoint.
Proposed by Councillor Mitchell, seconded by Councillor Falconer, and I'll stop with
you.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Right. Yep.
Right. Planning register.
My news on this is that there have been no decisions this month that are not in line with councillors' recommendations, and I've heard nothing from Baber concerning that application at Pegtail Court where councillors were bemused that there had not been a listed building application, and we asked the question, why is there no listed building application? And I've heard absolutely nothing.
Okay. So, Ian, it's over to you.
Two applications. The first one concerns a change of use of first of all the tea room at residential use, change of use of the first floor. The ground floor is currently a tea room, and under this proposal will remain a tea room. The building is created as a conservation area. No structural, so there are no structural changes required to change the use to the top floor. The applicant originally changed the top floor from residential to tea room in this application here, in 2021. No structural changes are required at the time to change with that top floor to a tea room. This new application, the reason for it to state the application is the applicant wishes to reoccupy the upstairs part of the property as the upstairs is not really economically viable as extended tea room space. And this application will help support its popular local business. No change is proposed to the structural property, only in case of use, as though the building consent application required. The areas of justice are not affected. In terms of a bit of history about this, the tea room was created, the owner of the tea room, and the same owner now as there was when it was fully residential, applied in 2015 to convert the ground floor from residential into a tea room, and then the same 2021 applied to convert the top floor as an extension to tea room and is now applying to have that reverted. Now, there is a relevant policy in the neighbourhood plan, in policy C9, which covers property market space, and it concerns the change of use of ground floor shops or services to residential. So, this is not changing ground floor, it's changing the top floor, so this policy doesn't apply. A suggestion would perhaps be that any residential use of that top floor should be the owner's use only and not less. There was no consensus agreed by the planning group, hence we're discussing it here. Just in case you're not clear, the property is number 6 Marketplace, Lavender and Blue Tea Room. And this is the top floor, which prior to 2021, this was the layout. It was the layout after the change of use, and that layout is the remain. It would be remain the same if this application went through.
Can I ask, is the proviso that you can't let out your bedroom enforceable?
Yes, I mean the planning application, for example, quite a planning application I looked at, which is the conditions on the number 10 Lady Street. So if you look there, the original application is converted from a residential property into a a wine bar and a restaurant, left the top stairs. The upstairs accommodation as owner's accommodation, that was in the original application, it was specifically stated that it's on accommodation. So in terms of that means it can't be let out because it's specified.
But this application says it's for the owners to occupy.
Actually, on the Bebo planning portal, I think it's the environment, environmental health, I can't remember what they're called, environment department. They make that point that Ian's just made about that this this upstairs, the first floor, would not be appropriate for letting on a commercial basis. Because of all sorts of reasons. Principally, because it is only a bedroom with a bathroom, there is no kitchen.
And there will be additional requirements if you're electing it in order to meet any regulations.
But I think it's, I can't second guess why Ian wrote what he did, but I support that view because all sorts of Airbnbs pop up, garden sheds, all sorts of things, and I think that we just need to be mindful of that. I'm not suggesting for one minute that this owner would be thinking of that at all, but I think we just need to cover ourselves here.
How do they get to the
key there? Those stairs.
And that goes to the ground floor.
Does anybody have any comment to make that would affect us not approving this?
Yeah.
In which case would somebody... Yeah?
Sorry, I think that as Ian has suggested in his area, and said as well, we would want to improve the condition that it was only for the owner's use only.
So, right, so the motion would be that we recommend approval for it to be... go back to residential for use of the owner.
For this personal use of.
Yes. Well, you can do that in proper language, can't you?
Yes, of owner only, but otherwise, yes.
Yes. So would somebody like to propose that as a motion? Councillor Ranzetta, Councillor Morford, and start at this end?
Yeah.
No, I'm abstaining.
Yes.
So,
one abstention, one no, all the others are yeses. Thank you. Next.
The second application concerns notification of works to trees and conservation area, showing one receiver, and it's 1340 Market Post, which you can see is this area here. It's peaks, and there's a picture here of a tree. There's a single tree in the garden, and it's up against the fence and against the stone here, and it's quite, it's grown very large. It's not an instant species, large association, heavy pruning is not appropriate for that sort of conifers. It's currently the only tree that was in the photo, and we should encourage the applicants to plant new trees somewhere in the garden to encourage wildlife, because those are the trees that are places for birds to nest and forage. Otherwise, I'd recommend,
in the context that this council has often recommended planting of new trees, but actually that gets ignored by waiver unless there's a TPO. Right. So only if there's a TPO do they have to listen to that one. Is the motion to recommend approval full stop?
Correct.
Or are we... Okay,
well, full stop. That's what we agree with, yeah.
Right.
But I mean,
would anybody like to comment?
Sorry,
or would you? Maybe, or would somebody just like to crack on?
Right.
So I think this motion is proposed by Councillor Sherman and seconded by Councillor Mitchell.
Yes.
Was that it for planning? I can't remember now. Was that it? Yes. Okay. So, Lavenham Neighbourhood Plan report.
I don't think we need to go through the actual report, it's been on minutes and everybody's had ample time to read it and make any comments if they wanted to. The only other thing that has happened in
for them is Mrs. Catherine Lee, as Mrs. Catherine Lee has approached us to advise on what is happening about the shower report, which, as you all know, I said I'll do it through email or me. The gentleman has sent a very, very stern email to every councillor about the context of the questionnaire. And I would suggest that it's been through every single councillor, and every single councillor has made their suggestions that I would rather not reply to the gentleman in any way, shape or form, because before, at the last meeting, he did actually bring up some points, and I followed him out, so I would email him, and I actually emailed him the context of this questionnaire, that it wasn't anything to do with heritage, that is a separate document, and that will be done after, so the village will be protected. He replied back to me that it's absolutely wonderful. I'd answered all his queries, thank you very much. And then a couple of days later, you all got the same email as I got with the council and commission. I would tend to not even respond to it because I think we might get another mail from everybody's entitled to their view. I don't know how I can answer the same questions twice. I don't know how to flower it. A different way to make a different answer. And as for Mrs. Lee, I did take the problem that I haven't seen the reply, and if you did reply, I apologise, Mrs. Lee. But I did take it up with the chair for advice to what to do, and I've done that. But now we do that. And other than that, we have a meeting, unfortunately, on Monday, so that I have to wait now until minutes for. But next one, if you have a I have nothing to report.
Okay, thank you. Does any councillors have any questions regarding that? No? Okay, we'll move on. Thank you very much. Report concerning charging for use of the public toilet.
This is going to be me, isn't it? So, in December, I was asked to go away and do an investigation of the options to reduce the cost of providing the rooms. And as mentioned,
and you've lost your order.
Excuse me. Goodbye.
Anybody else want to go? No? They're in for the long
Thank you all. Thank you all. Our underlying issue here is that we have donation income now of about £2,500 a year. We used to get £18,000 or so a year from this when the car parking was free, but now the donation income is about £2,500. And it costs us £18,700 or so to run these loops. So really we're losing £15,000. That's our problem. So what's happened since December? SALC has confirmed that a parish council like ours can charge for the use of the toilets. There's nothing illegal about that. That we could, we wouldn't have to charge VAT on the on the fees, and we'd be able to reclaim all our VAT. So legally, it's all fine. The next thing is that did a bit of research. I think I found that Weymouth Town Council had paid £5,000 or so for a door, which included £1,600 or so for each new door, because they actually have new doors put in rather than working with their existing doors. And that was for a card-only system in a year or so back. Knutsford Town Council put in a card-only system years previously, and that was £3,500 or so per door. And then I found out that the average usage charges are 20 pence to 50 pence. I made inquiries with three suppliers. And this is what I've managed to find out. That if we were to go for a cashless only system at Prentice Street, that would probably, I mean, you can see the numbers there, but basically if you end them up, you're going to pay 8,000 quid. If you went for a cash and card system at Prentice Street, that's 12 grand. And you can then see the amounts of money for Church Street as well. It's sort of £16,000 to £23,000. So to put a cashless system in would probably cost us £24,000. And for a cash and card, £35,000. And actually these costs are much in line, with what you can then, you know, when you read on the web about how much other people have paid. It's £3,000 a door for a cardless system, and nearly £5,000 a door if you want a cash and card system. It's much cheaper actually if all your toilets all open off a lobby area. But because ours don't, the system needs to be on every single door. Now there are many great advantages of not being on the lobby area, and it is the modern way of doing it, but it makes it very expensive, £3,000 to £5,000 a door. And then, Ian, if you could roll on to the next page. This is what it, in the end, it looks like. You have the card reader and the cash collection device outside. If you want the cash collection device embedded in the wall, which looks very much tidier, then you're into some more building work. So further matters to council to consider. All of these companies are quite clear there will be local electrician charges on top of these quotes. Their argument is you locally will be able to buy this at a much better price from a local electrician than we from our base in Lancashire or Dorset, which is where the two of them come from, will be able to. We'll then have to enter into maintenance contracts for these things because they are complicated. The ongoing cost of the card devices will be £10 per month per door. So we will be spending £720 on card devices a year for this, and then 2.5% per transaction. It's very, very expensive. And if you go down furthermore, maybe this conversation is about to end very quickly. These are further issues that I had. If we charge 20 or 50 pence, and clearly what we're going to do is get 20 and 50 pence coins, aren't we? Actually, currently the most common donation is pound, because that's what we ask for. People put in 20 pences and 10 pences, but actually we get quite a lot of pound coins. Then we would have coin jams and equipment failures, and I'm the only employee, and I don't really intend to do coin jam failures up beyond 5 o'clock on a Friday night. Then the expectation of cleanliness. In fact, if you actually charge a bit, there is a whole pile of people going, yeah, I'm really that great, but it is free, you know. Yeah, I do actually hear this from inside my office, you know, to which the response is, well, and I noticed you didn't put your money outside like everybody else, but, you know. Because as soon as you start reading about these, I've been exciting month over the last 3 months. The people say, well, of course the toilets we need to be cleaned twice a day, otherwise you'll get complaints. Really? And our toilets are adjacent to pubs that the toilets are free. Because the next thing that any toilet charge person tells you, that as soon as you sit charges and the usage will drop between 50 and 75%. That is what will happen. Now, if you're next to a pub, yes, you get the idea.
I don't think we're going to be very long on this.
You've all read it. I've introduced it to the subject of the minute, and I'm going to say one last thing, which is the very last bit. Ian, if you can make it go down the stage further. What this is trying to say is that if we were trying to make this payback over 3 years, we would need the usage in summer to be 130 people per day. That's 25 visits to each loo per day with people paying. So I was told to put this up. I don't think I put a motion on this. It was really, if actually everyone goes, yeah, Andrew, thank you for going through all of this, but we're not taking it any further, then we could end this conversation here. Is everybody happy with that?
Well, I would like to say thank you, Andrew, for doing the research. It helps to crystallise thoughts about potentially a way forward. What we have to consider is how are we going to pay for them? £18,000 a year at today's cost, and we're getting £2,000 from the public. Now, it's for the people of Lavenham to decide when it comes to an election in May 27 about whether or not they think that these facilities are worth paying £60,000 effectively of today's money for the visiting public to use the public toilets. It's unfortunate the new publicans just left the room because if we withdrew the toilets, for example, in Render Street, I think the hospitality premises will have something to say about it.
Yeah.
We just have to face facts, actually. We are a village that people visit, and we cannot have a situation where we don't have public facilities. But we do need to consider how we're going to raise money to bridge that gap between what we collect and what it's costing this village.
Because having a fundraiser for toilets doesn't quite have the sort
of cachet. It doesn't do it for me.
And I would adjust this.
My idea is about investigating having solar put on the toilets and a battery. And getting the monthly solar to one power toilet and having a battery where we can feed into the grid and get one from the grid to help fund the toilets.
There would be an initial outlay.
There might be grants.
Yeah. The only thing is, I may share, I don't think we'd be able to put them on the roof of the porter cabin style toilets in Prentice. I don't think that roof would support it. Although, that's just my thoughts. And it's Weber's building.
Sorry?
The Church Street one is Weber's building. We would need to give consent for that, and probably we want a cut. But it's
not cut of everything.
I know, it's a good idea, though, Jeff.
Also in the conservation area.
And would be viewed, probably viewed by listed properties.
Under the that property.
Not in the relation to the East.
If you look at Woodbridge, the church in Woodbridge is actually putting a plan application for solar on its roof.
I think the church here will be doing it fairly shortly.
But it won't be viewed, but you won't be able to view it.
But the building out there on Church Street, I can't remember how the roof line goes, but if it's facing east, that's not into the conservation area.
But I wouldn't do it roadside, but going down the car park.
Yeah,
the car park side, yes. We're still in the... Actually, very seriously, we are still in... The reason we haven't signed the car park lease for that building is Baker is still doing the final electricity checks. So that gives me an opportunity to discuss solar panels facing the car park side with them. So thank
it's
you
a good suggestion, and it will be investigated. That's an action.
Okay, before we close on solar panels, a conversation with the managing director working at the Open Press in the week, and he wants me to express sensors for them to put the solar power and the firm there is running completely on solar power, but then electricity bill is nil.
Right, sorry, can I?
Yeah,
sorry, I've forgotten a bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that it's worth having a conversation surely with the cock horse and with Charlie Buckle and with anybody else who has loos in eateries, because it is putting the pressure on them if we have broken loos, etc., and seeing if they will contribute in some way towards some costs of maintaining the public loos.
And the church, because they have one loo at the back of the church, but they're always having funerals and weddings. And
so that we're alleviating. I mean, if our loos are working properly, it's going to stop people going into the pubs and using the loos. And I wonder how many people, if we had this, would turn around and go off to the cock horse.
History is that actually, if we ask people for money, they don't offer. History is not good in this, unless we actually threaten to close the loos. That would be the only way.
I don't
way.
Think it would be a threat, Andrew. I think that financially, going forward, maybe the other thing that we have to seriously consider. Not all of them, friends, but some of them.
I'm to reduce it by 50%.
Well, I mean, my comment was that, Andrew, do we have an analysis of the Prentice Street toilet costs, including all the repairs and everything, and the Church Street toilet costs? And if, for example, we said that the closest Prentice Street ones are just the Church Street ones, you know, there's a balance of income as well, so it'd be interesting what income we get from Prentice Street against the costs and Church Street.
Well, we've had this I think you know the answer to this, Ian, pretty much, yeah, which is that the cost of running the loos, Church Street and Prentice Street, Prentice Street is half as much because there are two rather than four. That's what the cost is. But the revenue in Prentice Street is rubbish. It is nowhere near a third. It is more like a fifth. It is Prentice Street that is a particularly bad financial result.
So in other words, what you're saying, Church Street donations are partially funding Prentice Street. So much
we're making a huge loss on both, but Prentice Street is particularly bad.
So that might be the focus of our thoughts moving forward. I know historically there's been lots of problems with drainage and breakages.
I think this is something that we're going to have to consider at a later meeting. Yes. There's a tough decision to be made here potentially. But I don't think we can really continue with this any further at this point.
And alternative usage of toilet sites is problematic because it does have meteorological effects from the continuing fumes. It was something we were taught at university.
Right. Lovely, thank you. Mm. Okay, we're going to move on to a report concerning the assignment of the lease of 2 Lady Street, commonly known as the Hub.
So, at the last February meeting, I was instructed to go get some legal advice to understand the council's legal position. And what the lawyer has told me is that very normally a lease contains the words that the landlord may not unreasonably withhold or delay assignment. Normally, a lease has this. The landlord must not unreasonably withhold or delay. That wording is not in this lease. That means this is a legal conversation, not a moral conversation or any other conversation. That means that this council is not under any obligation to assign this lease to a charity or whatever other organisation the Community Land Trust turns it into. It's entirely our decision, your decision. That's the first thing I found out. The next thing I found out was that we had a letter from a trustee of the Hub saying that it was all basically saying that the legal assignment would be fairly straightforward and legal assignment. The lawyer's advice is that actually it's a little more complicated than that. There would need to be a license to assign and a deed of assignment. So the first thing I've told you is it's council's decision whether to assign it or not, and the second thing I've told you is the legal process is a little more complicated than that trustee had led us to think. And the last two pieces of information I'm going to give councillors are that a change to the term of the lease, so how many years it is, like 10 or 20 or something, that can't be dealt with in an assignment process. That would require a new lease. But changes to the clauses in the leases, such as the repairs obligation clause or the rent payable clause, which is currently, rent payable is currently a peppercorn, the maintenance is we maintain outside, they maintain in. It's the simplest. If you wanted to change those, that can be done as a deed of variation at the same time as life. But this is I was told to go away and find out what council's options were, and that's, I think, now clear as to what council's options are. Are there any questions for me?
So we're not making any decision tonight. This was merely, we asked Aunt Clark to go in, get some information, and this is the information.
Do we have any idea of what the legal costs would be to assign this?
Hundreds. The answer is hundreds. It's not vast enough. Anyway, everyone's difference of vast is different, but it's not thousands, and neither is it, has completely no consequence.
As I noticed, this is quite good at playing in Perry.
It would be in hundreds of.
Okay,
well,
thank you.
Kesson. Just looking at what you just said, the some aspects of these could simply be changed, but others would require a new lease.
Mm-hmm.
As I understood the lease, and I'm not claiming to be a lawyer in this respect, there is the opportunity every 5 years for the tenant to bail out, but there is no opportunity for the landlord to bail out.
That's right.
If we wanted to have a parity in that or something similar to it, would that mean that we'd have to have a new lease, or would that count as a assignment of the lease, or do you mean
The answer the solicitor gave to me was, if that was suggested, you'd have to go away and have a think about it as to whether a new lease was required. So the answer is, I don't quite know.
I think it's E that would apply in the term of the lease.
She thinks it's probably C, but you know, I don't.
Okay, well,
you've asked one. Yes.
You didn't have to ask that. Yeah.
Anybody else got any difficult questions? Oh, I want to make a comment.
Other than say, I think you're absolutely right, this needs to be considered, and probably not around this table, as it were, but in discussion with the tenant, and needs to be an attempt to make sure that whatever comes out of those discussions, A, is fair to both parties. I don't believe the current lease is fair to us. And B, the tenant can make use of whatever changes they want to make in order to maintain a viable operation for them.
Yeah. Anybody else want to make any comment?
Just one comment about the cost, the legal cost of doing the license assignment, lease assignment. Would those be, like I said, down the parish council?
That would be that would be one of the things, again, one could talk to the hub about, you know. I'm not going to suggest to councillors what they do here,
yeah.
But you could say, there is an argument to say, one could say to the hub, well, you're the ones that are converting to a charity, you're the ones that are leading to these legal costs, so you should pay for it. And there's another argument that says they provide a wonderful service and maybe etc.
Yeah,
I make no comment.
I don't make any comment.
I make no comment either. It's entirely up to the parties to sort it all out.
Sure.
Okay. I think, thank you for that report. And I think we need to move on now. Another report concerning progress concerning allotments.
Oh, have I been informed of you speaking on this? We have some recent upgrades.
Frank, remember, I'm very sorry, you're not allowed to be in the room when we get to allotments.
Okay, throw the other allotments person out as well.
The other allotments. She says, if you're talking about someone in the public area, that's fine.
You're a councillor.
You're a councillor, unfortunately. You
can I sit over here then?
No,
you
have to leave the room.
I just don't know, Frank, I'm wrong.
No,
you are very welcome to stay. Allotments, you're very welcome to stay, apologies.
But you can't speak.
You can't speak.
I can't speak?
No.
Why not?
Because you're not allowed to.
No. Frank, this is exactly the same situation as last week. As you remember, you spoke from the public participation area.
Yes, I was speaking from the public participation area then.
But yes. This is not the public participation area at this time.
That was much earlier in the agenda. We've moved on.
Yes.
But I'm going to talk
Councillor Dominey, would you like to take some time to reflect and compose yourself?
I'm sorry, Frank, you do need to leave at this point. It's exactly the same as last time when you left for the allotment part of the debate. You do need to leave.
Oh, thank
you, Frank.
Oh,
I'll call you back in my middle.
I'll let you know soon. Thank you. Thank you, Lee.
If you don't leave, I will.
Thank you, Frank.
Are you threatening me?
No, I was just going to pause the meeting. Good.
Don't ever threaten me.
Sorry about that, councillors. I don't know what came over him. Sorry, can I just make a point? Or ask a question, please?
Why does this council, under any circumstances, or does this council, under any circumstances, entertain reports from commercial enterprises? Because that's what I think the riverside allotments are. It's a commercial enterprise.
Bill.
Well, why on earth would we want to hear a report from a commercial enterprise?
We didn't, which is why we didn't hear it.
No, I thought the idea was to leave the room because of conflict of interest over public allotments.
It is.
Well,
it is.
I think the point needs to be made clear to commercial enterprises, which will remain nameless, that it's not the business of this council for the commercial enterprise to be reported to this council.
I'd also like it made on record that the way he was standing over you was intimidating.
I agree.
Right, shall we move on?
Yes.
I think he's caused enough discussion.
So, this is allotments. The motion we passed last time was that it was quite complicated.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
The clerk is instructed to work with the relevant parties and obtain legal advice to finalise the agreements up to a maximum cost of £1,500, and then to return to council with the final draft documents for council to consider. But before formally instructing the solicitor, the clerk was to contact Suffolk County Council Public Rights of Way to explain that the PC is proceeding with all of this and to understand Prowl's requirements before we start to do the legal documentation. So Prowl first. The update to the councillors is that I contacted Prowl, and indeed I want to point out that the Latin Allotments Association was very proactive in contacting Prowl as well. So basically, we all went to Prowl, as was supposed to happen. And that's generated the response from them, which is basically, it's with us, and that's what the third paragraph says, it's with us. Please, no further action until we formally respond. So currently we are now in the Prowl waiting list. It's also relevant to me to say that Councillor Lindsay has been in contact with Prowl and is trying to move them along. He referred to that in his report. But it is very frustrating that Prowl, we are now ground to a halt, waiting for Prowl to sort themselves out. And as this document then goes on to say, a councillor has raised a number of queries with me and perhaps with the Allotments Association and perhaps with Hartzell Cutton concerning the draft heads of terms, and we've received various answers from them, which I think the answers we've generally pretty positive. I think that's the message that people need to take home. That the answers received are pretty positive, but we're currently in a Prowl queue. That's really the summary.
Right.
That's where we are.
Is that the whole thing? Right. Thank you very much.
That is it.
Any councillors want to make any comment, or are we happy with everything so far?
Could I ask one question? Where is the car park proposed?
It's next to the allotment.
Just adjacent to where the it's in that same parcel of land.
This is the land. Got
it.
Yeah.
And it's
okay.
Just there, and the allotment.
So it's sort of the left hand side.
So it would mean coming down the.
No, coming across.
It wouldn't come down to there. We want it to go through from the paddock.
There's gate.
That's exactly what Mr. Lindsay has done, and indeed at least one of the Lavenham Allotments Association have written similarly. I think I've written similarly. I think we've all written similarly.
Right.
Okay.
Well, if it's not done by next time, I think we should be considering some kind of attempt to censure those who are delaying this making.
Shall we tell Councillor Donnelly that we're done with allotments?
Go on.
We've finished discussing the allotments.
Okay. The next motion is concerning the replacement of Church Street lights.
You've got a load more information about that.
I have. So, as this says, and it is on the 5th of June, the owner of a property on Church Street said the light that's attached, they had a street light actually attached to their house. It wasn't on a pole, it was attached to their house. And as it says here, that light has now come partly out of the wall to which it's fixed, and that the light has caused damp in that corner, and effectively they demanded that the light be removed. I think that probably is the right way to describe this. And they, as they pointed out here, this is, as we said, this is the second time this has pulled out. The previous time was in 2022, and it's clear that the lights are way too heavy and large for that.
Yeah, we have precedence on this. There was a light on Water Street, on the corner of Barn Street, I think, that was originally attached to the wall of the building. And this very same reason, that the wall was not strong enough to support it, and it was damaged to the bricks, a lamp post was put in that place. And then there was an extra cost associated with that. So, I mean, that is essentially the solution. In fact, and you also note on number 10, there is a lamp post on the corner there, and previously the light was attached to wall number 10. So well, there are precedents for this action.
So that light has been removed.
So can we get them to subsequent events?
We can get to subsequent events. The light was disconnected, the fittings are being stored, but then we got, so the light was, thank you, and your mouse is exactly where the light was. That was either incredible luck or a very good judgment. There you go. So the light was there. We've now had complaints, because that tree on the right-hand side, there it really does narrow the pavement, and the pavement is, because of the tree roots, really sort of uneven, really, really uneven. And it's not great, frankly. You know, it's, in my opinion, it's a narrow pavement, it's dark, and it's uneven. It's not great. So we have received complaints from concerning the pavement is there. That's the next thing that happened. The next thing that happened after that was we asked Ian, can you show the very top of that?
No, you
cut out the top. You really have cut out the top. So the first thing that happened was we asked Suffolk Highways whether anything could be done to make the pavements less uneven. And people, councillors will be stunned to hear that it did not reach Suffolk County Highways criteria for intervention. Well, hey, we all agree with it. Let's have some humour about this. So, they are not going to do anything. So, street lighting has suggested three possible locations for replacement lights. So, position one is outside number two of the church rooms, at the narrow pinch point within the footpath, beneath that tree. So effectively, it's a low, it's not a huge street light, it is a low, relatively low street light, right outside that, underneath that tree. That is suggestion one. Suggestion two is outside on the front of the park, number 74 Church Street. That is, frankly, 4 or 5 feet away from where it was before. It is there. Suggestion three is that post which has got outside the parish office in Lewes, which has got all the signage on it, effectively that post is replaced, it becomes a street light post and all the signage goes back on it again. But it is, so one piece of street furniture removed and replaced by a different piece of street furniture. Those are the three proposals, and frankly, each of these proposals, you can see the money sitting at the bottom, they're all about £2,400. Right? So, what can councillors do? It is my opinion that to ignore the complaints being received from parishioners would be perhaps not sensible in a whole bunch of ways. That's one thing. That's my thought only, though. They could decide to put a light in one of these places, or possibly even two of these places, having thought about the various issues, the advantages and disadvantages of each site. I think that's me done.
Yes.
Just a quick thought. If we were to come, we can't, obviously, because we're not old and girls, but if we were to come on the left-hand side and come nearer this way, there is a footpath that goes down to Bears Lane, yeah, down there. I take my dogs down there sometimes. Now, that's very, very dark down there, and it would be a safety matter, I would have thought, to perhaps have a street light there, which would also perhaps help elsewhere.
Well, we're dealing with a very specific problem here, and the problem is at that pinch point where it's very dark because of the tree, and a light on the left-hand side of the road would illuminate.
I don't think the left-hand side. I think it's got to be on the right.
And it is. This is a high-traffic area. You know, you've got a lot of people going to and from the church, the Cock Horse.
It's not just its high traffic, Janice, and I do agree with you about that. The pavement is extremely poor there, and it is on a camber, that bit of the pavement. And I think we've got no choice but to replace the light that has been lost on the side of that building, and it seems to me the only options are A or B.
Councillor Norman.
I'm trying to go tonight and have a look. And I think we ought to put the light further this way, so the other side of the tree, because it's actually darker there than it was outside the church room.
So you're not saying underneath, well...
I don't want to put it under the tree anyway, because in the summer you have to look on time and not on PIR, because otherwise you're going to have the light on all the
way. Oh, it's the wrong time is anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all pre-programmed.
They're on...
So I don't have it for the sensor, because the tree will... in the summer will be full of
but
they're not
they're on timers, they're not on sensors.
if you would put it behind the tree, then it would light the footpath, it wouldn't be illuminating the road at all.
It's not about the road, it's about the footpath.
But if you put it behind the tree, it would just illuminate that path.
Which is what?
Well, what?
Which is the complaint, it was about the footpath.
Well, then, that would be
if you drive along the road in the dark,
so that's here.
Yes.
If you go further down, it's actually darker in front of the other house.
I think the problem there is because of the problem with the footpath. It's very specific to a very short part of the path. I mean, councillors may consider. Right, that option wasn't discussed with Suffolk. But there is a light further down on the other side of the road.
I think, in answer to. So, councillors could decide that they want me to go off and talk to Suffolk about a spot, say, 10 or 15 metres down. No, so, they won't pass the motion tonight, it does not get any proposers, and I will go talk to them about 10 or 15 metres further down and come back. Councillors could decide to do that, and or they could, you know, without being wanting to be rude to you, Councillor Norman, that's, you know, your opinion. Maybe other councillors disagree. I wait to see what people say.
May I suggest that actually there's a door knock of all the houses that are affected by this? Yes. It's fun. You know, I know certainly a parishioner complained to me about it, and I think it's sent in your direction, Andrew, you know, who lives in that area. I feel that, you know, we've got to listen to what the local people, you know, what the issues are over there.
Yeah, but it's not just the people that live there, though, it's the people that are walking up and down.
Yeah, I know, but principally, to be fair, Chair, at this time of night, or in the winter, in the dark, there's not that many visitors walking around.
No, they're really local. They're shining in their window.
So what if we ask all of the... I'm just being devil's advocate here for a moment. So what if we ask everybody that lives there and says, would you mind there being... a light on the pole near your property, and they all say no. but they can't actually refuse. Sorry, that is the other thing that...
But I do think there needs to be public engagement on it. I genuinely do.
Can Can I just put, I mean, I think that Alison and I are in the right, light pollution. But if you go back to that previous picture, Ian, sorry, if you look at where you had suggested it was going to go, there's a little window up there. That's somebody's bedroom. Do you see the one?
On the gable end.
Yeah, and that if that's somebody's bedroom, the last thing you want is a street light right outside there.
But that's where the street light was, hanging outside. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just even wondering if whether, you know, people, what time do the lights go out at night?
11.
I mean, it might be that these residents will offer to put an outside light along here, outside their own properties, until 11 o'clock.
They do have lights. I mean, I know that 75 and 76 both have lights outside them.
Right.
Which could be put on. Maybe
if they would agree to do that.
I'm quite happy to go and see them because I have my daughter's godparents.
Ah. So would they illuminate underneath the tree?
They are that pink house. They're on that pink, there's two pink houses. I don't know who's in the one near the top. But the
first
one. They did
actually.
Did they? Well, in the first one, that's where they live. I don't know if they've got anybody in the second one, but they could. They own both, so they could put lights on both of them.
I think it's what the other side of the tree that's the principal problem, Alice.
Fair enough.
But the way it was described to me by the parishioner who...
And you've got to notice that for planning, so why wouldn't you put a notice up to just invite everyone to discuss it?
Because you don't have to get residents' permission.
I know,
well,
but you don't,
you
want,
don't have to.
You don't
want
to cause
it.
No.
Andrew, if they come up with another option of having a smaller lamp actually put on the end of their house...
They don't want to...
This big thing that overarches.
They don't want a light on their house.
So,
do you reckon that might be the real reason?
So I know they don't want a light attached to their house, right? I have not discussed them what their feelings are about a light in a pole 6 feet away from their house.
They did actually say that they didn't want to...
Actually, Councillor Muckian has corrected me. She's right. Because the last line in the document is, may I suggest that our light is discontinued as there's ample light from the pub.
And this is so, councillors, do we want to have a vote on putting lights there, or do we want to postpone this and do some other action? So am I to take it that there is no proposer for this motion?
No.
My question to councillors will be, if we postpone it, who is going to do this engagement? What exactly questions are we going to ask them? And when it comes back, which I think it probably will, that none of them fancy having a light out.
Well, I think if we invite them,
which is...
But why can't we just let them know we're going
to... Can the street light... Yeah,
low down
street, perhaps. Could the street light not just go here?
That's where we were saying.
Exactly.
Is that where
Yes. And it has to be a fairly low one, because it needs to be underneath the tree canopy. Well, that's exactly what we're suggesting.
That's all right.
Well, then I think what would be the polite thing to do, though, so that everybody know, and we bring it up at the next meeting, they can come in public time, at least give their opinion on what they feel.
Surely,
that's
if we're
going to bring
it up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, possibly 7 doors. It's a note through each door to ring the clerk and let him know what they're going to
do. And do X marks.
Well, so, I am going to tell Caroline Edmund because I just would.
So, are you going to take that as an action?
I'm just, not to do with the parish council, but I would say I'm this is part of the
It is to do with the parish council. So, are you going to take that as an action to put something through those doors?
Yeah.
That would be really helpful, thank you. And on the assumption that nobody is putting this forward, is proposing this motion, we'll move on. Agreed, councillors?
Oh,
Councillor Dominic, can you just moderate your behaviour, please?
The next report is concerning the tree survey. It's very, very short. It simply says that we have received the tree survey and it's with the tree surgeons for review.
You're not going to fall through all the different pages of it?
No, I'm not. No. Item 16.
Bins.
Bins.
A favourite subject of mine.
In summary, last summer, that's quite difficult for me to say, in summary, last summer, we got them to empty the bins that get really full a second time each week for basically April through to November. And that cost us £660. There's the list of the bins there, and frankly I think it was quite successful because what we didn't see was rubbish piling up around bins. Faber has changed its bin emptying charge. It was £83 per bin last year. It's £108 a bin this year because traditionally they say they have not recovered their costs on this, etc. And so the question is whether we get the same 12 bins emptied from March to November for £864 to cover the whole summer or not.
Thoughts?
Well, Andrew, since you just said that, you know, it seems to have gone well, and let's be frank about it, last year, before we did this, the place was a mess.
Yeah.
And it's for £200, I move that we do it.
Second.
Agreed. Yeah. Okay, so let's do this properly then. So, proposed by Councillor Mitchell, seconded by Councillor Moore, and I'll do an audible vote from
here.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. And the last item concerns a boundary dispute on First Meadow.
I'm afraid, Councillor Shaw,
do you wish to stay for a boundary dispute between First Meadow and Poultry Farm? It is the same person. I'm not a policeman, you know that.
I would suggest
you would. So, back last August, a local property owner advised that the boundary fence, which is meant to create the boundary between our property, i.e. which is the poultry farm, and its First Meadows, is clearly on our side of the drop curb. And indeed, Ian, if you can make the photograph come in, that was the boundary fence as was, and clearly the boundary fence is over the dropped curb. That is a fact. So the writer then went on, Ian, sorry, to say, this creep onto our land is confirmed on the land registry plan, and also the vendor advised that the fence has been put up on poultry farm land rather than the parishes. So two statements there, that the creep is confirmed by the plan and also the comments of the vendor. Subsequently, the property owner has removed part of the fence which overlapped the dropped curb. So it used to look like this, and now it looks like that. So what they have done is, as the narrative says, is they have removed the fence northward approximately 6 feet and laid gravel and put two shipping containers on the site. That's what they have done. So the fence is now 6 feet shorter. What happened also, subsequently, is I got from the solicitors the title deeds of First Meadow. This took many weeks because actually the First Meadow was transferred to the parish council on the 2nd of September 1940. It's kind of weird reading this long conveyance written in legalese from September 1940. Those deeds do not clearly show where the boundary is. It describes it as a site of 3.3 acres and some roofs and some poles and some, you know, but there's nothing. I relayed that information to the local property owner, together with my comment that it was my understanding that it's long been the case that title plans just show general boundaries and are indicative only. And indeed, it's my opinion that the local property owner hasn't Mac hasn't verified the creek via their land registry plan. However, they have given a whole pile of other supporting statements. On the 8th of January, the property owner wrote that our starting assumption, Ian, if you can move it down so we can see this, is that the edge of the boundary is the edge of the boundary is at the top of the red line.
Top of the red line. We are talking this red line.
With a purple line to show where the boundary sits directly opposite on the other side of the road, that red line becomes purple.
Mm-hmm. Okay, can you move it on, please?
Ah, then I can't read
that. Yes, yeah,
this line is 180 degrees horizontal, even if it doesn't appear so visually. So you can clearly see it crosses just before the corner of the entrance to the telephone exchange. You'll see that the centre photo, we'll come to the end, matches the position of the fence post, confirming this is the true edge of our boundary. So if we look at the photographs, what that's trying to demonstrate is that the new positioning of the fence is opposite where it should be in the property owner's mind, the right place on the telephone exchange side of the street. Basically, the fence is now properly aligned with the telephone exchange side of the street. That is what the property owner is.
Sorry, I'm confused. I'm sorry to interrupt, but is this what it was before he moved the fence?
No, this is afterwards. Look at the new wood. You can see this is what it looks like now. So the property owner is explaining that the centre picture is the one that's properly aligned. Okay, so if we then go on, Clark's thoughts. The title of deed drawing shows the location of the boundary below and a line that intersects the telephone exchange gateway. So clearly, since if you take the right near that line, you go to the telephone exchange gateway. A conclusion could be, therefore, that the new fence line proposed by the owner follows this orange line on the satellite view based on where they've located the boundary fence by the near the river. This seems to be based on where the old bushes finished, assuming that they were all on the owner's land, not overhanging First Meadow. But that's quite difficult to see because actually the bushes have been removed. And there is nothing on the title, and there's no clear reference point to the river end of the boundary. Ian, if you go down. On the latest satellite view, orange is the proposed boundary line. Blue is the straight, is the boundary line if it follows the existing fence. And then my honest conclusion is the actual line may be somewhere in between, but it isn't really possible to determine where the line should be. It's very hard to do this. So if we go down a bit further. Right. So my opinion is that really it's, there are no clear reference points to say where the line should be, other than it's a straight line intersecting that telephone exchange gateway. So it is perhaps not clear where the boundary line should be. Councillors could decide that the property owner has made a very strong case based on the, if we go back to Ian, I think that if I was arguing for the property owner, could you go up?
Yeah.
Up. I would say, look, if I was the property owner, I'd focus on that map, I think, probably, which clearly shows that if you extend, this is from the Parish Council Title Deed mapping tool, that if you extend the line, then logically the boundary, it should be straight opposite, so pretty much where the curb to the telephone exchange starts to go in. So if we now go to the centre pictures, the centre three pictures, Ian, three pictures in. Look where that person is standing, pretty much on that point. That would be the argument that I would use if I was arguing for the vendor, I think. So the conclusions councillors could draw is where we were, and apologies, this is complicated and confusing, I think, is that the local property owners made a strong case, or that the local property owner is correct, they could do that, or indeed decide that they're incorrect. Councillors then consider whether either that case is really strong or correct, or it is somewhat unclear, and that it's the interest of this council to have certainty where the boundary is. You know, council wishes to be a good neighbour and we don't want to incur unnecessary costs. Because what I'm told by every lawyer that I've ever talked to about this is that actually when two people disagree, right, you can either suspend increasing amounts shouting at each other, right, or you can try and come to some conclusion. You know, there isn't an easy way out of this in these circumstances. We could make a boundary agreement with the local property owner with the cost of this shared, as we determine. And boundary agreements can either be done two ways. You can get a sort of 40 quid pack off the internet and try and do it there. Or you can actually get a surveyor to come along and a lawyer to document it properly, and a lawyer then to document it properly, and it's all done and dusted. Or you can do it more cheaply. So that's really the problem that I've been wrestling with in this one.
What do you think the chances are of getting just an informal agreement?
Zero.
I think actually the property owner would prefer an informal agreement because that would be cheaper.
Right, okay. Can I just ask a quick question? When you look at the property that is opposite that fence, there's two properties there, and one has been had extensive repair works. Is it called Glenholm? And I don't know who the new owners are of that property. Have they commented on this? Because obviously that fence and where it is actually on their land.
Yes.
No.
Not the person who owns the property.
Was it an access road to the second house?
Or do they have...
That is the title deeds for Poultry Farm that you can see there.
Oh, yeah. I see, right.
So Poultry Farm have that, and so presumably the new owners of Glenholm have right of access
over it.
Over it.
But Glenholm used to be had an access, it's not shown on there. There always was an existing vehicular access further down towards Bren Ely.
So councillors, what do you want to do about this boundary? We've got 7 minutes.
My government is going to try and reach an informal agreement. Boundaries are notoriously difficult.
I think if we can reach an informal agreement, that would be helpful. But the agreement then needs to be legally binding.
Yes.
Yeah.
And therefore it will need a legal input too, bearing in mind the nature of the person we're dealing with.
Mm. Like we will get creeped.
Yeah, well, if you don't pin it down, it'll get free. Yeah, yes, so it's going to be pinned down. Informal's fine, but
informal does involve a document. The only question is whether...
No, there needs to be a formal document, but locally negotiated and notarised by a solicitor.
That's the key. So, option one, assuming councillors want to do a deal here, right? Assuming they want to do a deal. Option one is that you get the document, download the document from the internet, and basically everybody signs it, and that's that. Mm. No lawyer is involved in the whole process. Option two is that actually, because none of us are lawyers, and you want it to be you know, done for good, so to speak, that actually you go, no, this is going to be a much more formalised, legalised process. I mean, councillors will have to make
it. And then it has to be registered with the land registry.
Yes. And who pays for that?
That's the cost.
So if you look at the motion, we share the cost. The motion lays out quite a bit of detail.
To offer to share the cost of drawing up an informal boundary agreement. I don't like the word informal. To drawing up a boundary agreement with the owner. The boundary agreement to be brought back to council for formal approval in exchange for the parish council cooperation concerning this matter. The property owner recognises that the maintenance of the fence
between First Meadow and their property is the responsibility of the owners of poultry farm. Is how I put it.
Yes, I agree. So you could take out that, change that word informal, just yes. Informal,
yes.
And then it would be quite clear that actually this is going to be done by professionals, of which none of in this area, where you basically say to the professional, now we want to do a formal agreement for where that fence
and
currently is.
As it changes that,
it registers the land registry.
I think we're, look, there will be costs associated with this, councillors, but you know, it's been said already, it's the nature of who we're dealing with here, this needs to be absolutely buttoned down.
Yeah. And to be fair, for that property in the future, absolutely. If we sell it, it's very important to clear.
I don't doubt the matter at all. I think so. There has to be a clean
point. I would make an amendment, I propose an amendment, and when the word informal has changed to formal.
And do you want at the end to. And at the end, specify it's the owners and between the First Meadow, and to specify at the end that it is the owners of the poultry farm.
Is the owners. Well,
because it doesn't mention poultry farm anywhere in the motion.
The property owner recognises that the maintenance of the fence between First Meadow and their property is their responsibility.
Yes. That's clear. Who's that?
Do you want to?
So you want to propose an amendment to this motion to change informal to formal?
Yeah. Yeah.
And are we wanting to actually mention the name of that property?
Yes, the name of the property has to be in there.
Yeah.
So if the amendment, we have to take this recording, this so that helps us here hugely. But the word informal becomes formal,
mm-hmm.
and the word is their responsibility becomes is the responsibility of the owner of the poultry farm.
Yes.
That would be the amendment. So,
so you are proposing that as an amendment. Yes. Would somebody like to second that?
Sorry, you still haven't included registration with the land registry. That needs to be in there.
Yeah.
Okay, and register. So there were three bits to the amendment.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yes.
Seconder was Roy. Yeah.
And a vote on this?
This is to make this the motion.
To make this
the motion. So, this isn't passing this motion, it's to make it the motion.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Yes.
Now, is that what you want to do, or with this, this is a vote to is that what
can
you're
I just
do?
Ask one question? Given that, that the owner has brought this up, why aren't they paying for the costs?
I'm not the owner's advocate, right? But if I was to be the owner's advocate, I would say, look, can't you see? It's all clearly in the wrong place. Look at the curve. Look at the lines. Right, why on earth am I paying to sort all this out, Gov? That's what I would say.
Because you have to pay the land registry to change things. I know this.
But that's what I'd say if I was the owner's advocate.
Would you use the word Gov?
Good point.
The
share is fair.
Yeah.
So Roy would like to move
and
in.
And I'll second it.
And we'll do an audible or something here.
Yes.
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 Right. Thank you.
That was the motion. Right. Thank you, everybody. That is the end.
You can go now. All right. I'll go.